For more presentations like this, visit www.xenos.org.
So our topic today is God's omnipotence and sovereignty and how it impacts our lives, the importance of understanding it. And you know, I am a sucker for The Flash and The Arrow. These two shows are a little bit corny, I admit. But the thing is, what's great about having friends like The Flash and The Arrow is that when you're watching that show and the friend, one of their friends is in trouble or they're in a super hard situation, you know that these guys can come and do something about it. And there's a lot of comfort in that when you see people suffering or going through something in a show like that. Well, that's the reason why we need to talk about that aspect of God, the power and greatness of God, because God is 100,000 or more times anything that The Flash and Arrow have. And that's the kind of powerful friend that we have who's able to make a difference in our lives. And so like that, meditating on that, focusing on that is important because it has the impact to change the way we love people. It has the impact to change the way that we interact on a daily basis. Tozer in The Knowledge of the Holy wrote, "What comes into our minds when we think about God is the most important thing about us." What he's saying is that the most important thing that we can do is have an accurate view of who God is. He goes on to say, "Only after an ordeal of painful self-probing are we likely to discover what we actually believe about God. A right conception of God is basic not only to systematic theology, but to practical Christian living as well. I believe there is scarcely an error in doctrine or a failure in applying Christian ethics that cannot be traced finally to imperfect and noble thoughts about God." He's saying that the way we think about God is actually the thing that affects us most in our lives. So everything from the way we understand theology to the way we practically live, the way we view God impacts all of that. And so it's super important to get that right for us to truly examine, learn, figure out the kind of God that we have. Now we're gonna be talking about sovereignty and omnipotence mostly, but I want to say something about love, because we have to understand that undergirding everything we talk about today is the fact that God loves us completely, that we have a God who's proven his love to us by sending his son to die on the cross completely sacrificially so that we can come into a relationship with him. It's important to understand that, because an all-powerful God who's not loving is a pretty scary picture. So as we talk about his power, as we talk about the fact that he's the ruler, we need to understand that all of that is for our good. He's a ruler who loves us and cares about us and wants to give us good things and be a sovereign God who's a good God. So it's important to reflect on that as we talk about it. But the reality is that an inaccurate view of God actually produces big problems in our lives, overwhelming circumstances, often hopelessness. If we are people who are only left to our own resources, there's a lot of hopelessness when we face difficult things. And so an inaccurate view of God just perpetuates that hopelessness and a feeling of overwhelming circumstances. So I thought I need to define sovereignty and omnipotence just so we can think about it. Sovereignty is that God is the supreme ruler of everything. He created the world and all that's in it, and his will is always accomplished. Nothing can thwart his will. He can do whatever he wants. He created the whole world. He actually breathed it into existence. So he is able to accomplish anything that he wants. There's a couple good verses. Well, there's a lot of good verses. Actually, one of your handouts is just verses about how God is God alone and how no one is like him. And that I just gave you that, not that we're going to go through those, but that you could have that as something to reflect on. Psalm 115:3 says, "Our God is in the heavens. He does all that he pleases." Job 42:2 says, "I know that you can do all things and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted." Omnipotence, then, is the idea that God's all-powerful. His power is infinite and unlimited. He's able to do everything he needs to do or everything that he wants to do. Jeremiah 10:12 says, "It is he who made the earth by his power, who established the world by his wisdom." Again, this will be a theme that keeps coming up. He breathed the world into existence. By his word alone, he's powerful enough to create the whole world. So we have an all-powerful ruler. And actually, there are some things about that that are comforting and some things that are discomforting. I'm wondering if you guys have any thoughts on what might be comforting about that or what might be discomforting. So one comforting thing is obviously he loves us and has this power to help us. A discomforting thing is that we have to deal with hard questions like, if he is all powerful, why do we have difficult or evil things that happen in the world? Any other thoughts on comfort or discomfort? Yeah. What if his plan isn't my plan? That's discomforting. You guys are hitting on all the important things about this. It can be very comforting us to know that we have this kind of God. It can also be discomforting because he's all powerful. He can do what he wants. His view might not be our view. And actually, one of the things I want to emphasize is that we're rebellious kings. We actually like to rule our own lives. And so when you talk about somebody who has the right to rule, who has the wisdom that we don't have, who has the ability to do what he wants, although that is comforting, it also infringes on what we want sometimes, because we also want to rule our lives and not give our lives over to him. As Sproul says, "Most Christians salute the sovereignty of God, but believe in the sovereignty of man." For many of us, we tip our hats to this idea that he's a great ruler, that he's an all-powerful king, but we also like to hold on to the fact that we want a say in our lives. Another way of putting it by Terry Crist is, "Sovereignty is a humbling doctrine. It reminds us that God is God and we are not. When we think we're ready to advise God on how to run the universe, he just looks at us and says, 'How many stripes do you have on your sleeve?' That's what sovereignty does. It puts us in the place where we feel free to say nothing about the way God runs the universe." So we often want to put him in a box, but he is the one who actually has the say. And actually, good for us, because he has the wisdom that he knows what's best, but it doesn't mean that we don't fight that. Our tendency is to want to manage God. Crabb was talking about this, how he's got this big story of what he's working on, and we often want him to fit into our story of what we want him to do in our lives. And we often want to have him just work for us instead of for us to be able to step back and see what he's doing. And what happens with that is that we limit the trust that we put in him. And we live, as one of my friends talks about it, we live self-hyphenated lives where we say, I intellectually believe in the fact that I want God to be in my life, but I still want to at least half hang on to all these things like being self-dependent, being self-reliant, putting out there, yeah, I want to follow Christ, but actually I still want to at least live part of that where I am leaning on myself. So I want to spend a little time talking before we get into looking at the content of some verses. I want to talk just a little bit about some of this thinking that we do that's not right. So the framework that I want you to think about this is, if left to our own resources, if we're thinking about things only from our limited thinking, these are some things we struggle with, and these are some ways that we tend to think. So, for example, many of us struggle with fear and insecurity. It's a common human concern. And if we're thinking only from our own resources, not from the idea that we have a powerful God, we think things like, I'm afraid of what others can do to me. We think things like, I'm afraid to speak the truth. I'm afraid to have a hard conversation with someone because I'm afraid of rejection. I'm worried about what others think of me. These are thoughts that can really permeate our lives, and actually, they can be, for some of us, really paralyzing, this type of thinking. Another issue that I want to talk about is the idea of control. Sometimes control is born out of fear, but what I mean by this is that if left to our own resources, we tend to want to go and make sure that we make things happen as we want them to happen. And so we might think things like, if I'm the only one looking out for myself, we might not say it this way, I must control people and circumstances. We might not be so bold to say that, but we're thinking, who is looking out for me? I need to make sure that I make this work out the way that I can. Or I have to take care of myself, and I can. And that's where that self-hyphenation comes in. I can do it. I actually am in control. Or if I don't control this situation, I'll suffer. And all suffering is bad. My goal is comfort, so I better try to manipulate this so that I'm able to avoid suffering. Another issue that I think is huge in our thinking is this idea of justice, where we experience a lot of hurt in this world. And some of our thinking, when we get hurt, we can go to a place where we're thinking like, I need to get justice for this. Someone needs to pay for this. And oftentimes when we meditate on that, it just becomes bitterness in our lives. And so we may think things like, no one understands how bad I've been hurt by someone. Or, I have to get justice or vengeance for this now. I have to take care of that. Because again, no one's looking out for me. I can't forgive because it lets that person off the hook. This is the kind of thinking that we get into where it, because this person has hurt me so much, I can't forgive him or her because then somehow I'm not having them pay for what they did. And so it's letting them off the hook. Or I feel like a lot of people struggle with this where they start looking around and realizing like my life has not turned out the way I planned for it. And that is the source of a lot of feeling of injustice and feeling of bitterness because things just haven't worked out the way I wanted. And then finally, the wrong thinking that I want to talk about is the idea of despair. And what happens is if we're left to our own resources, when we face these hard things, we can end up in a lot of despair. And we can think things like, these circumstances are just too difficult. Or nothing good will come from this. Or this situation, this friendship, this decision is hopeless. And like I said, often the despair factor comes in when we start to realize our limitations. Because we can waver back and forth between, I can handle this, I can do it, and when we see things that we can do, we can try to control and manipulate, and then sometimes then we end up in despair because things didn't work out the way we had hoped, even though we tried everything that we could possibly try. We're underlying all of this wrong thinking is related to God's power. It's also related to God's love, but we're not going to talk as much about that. God's either too small or not loving enough to be involved in this situation. So basically what we're saying when we take all these different routes and start to believe these things is God's not sovereign. God's not all powerful. So it's an aspect of unbelief that we have in God's ability and his care for us. Right thinking then has to do with realizing our need for something beyond ourselves to be able to handle a lot of these things, to be able to handle difficulties beyond our control. What's interesting is God can use despair greatly in our lives, because when we get to that point, that's when often we're willing to consider leaning on him, because we've exhausted all our ideas. When we're still on the, I can control this, it's much harder for God to have an impact. So part of the right thinking is starting to realize we actually need God to have an impact on situations. How to think rightly then is to contrast and understand our weakness with God's strength. So to understand his sovereignty. How to understand our finite smallness with God's infinite greatness, to understand his omnipotence. So you're going to hear this also repeated today. The way to think rightly is to begin to understand we are weak and God is all powerful, and to see that contrast. So I'm going to look at Isaiah 40 because I think it's a great chapter that shows these two things, man's weakness and God's strength. But before I do, I have to mention one more thing about our thinking about humans. Because we do, you know, like I kind of am pointing out with the different wrong thinking we have, we kind of waver between being in despair and seeing our weakness and looking and seeing that actually we're pretty great, and that man himself is pretty great. And even if we don't necessarily feel like we are great, which some of us may not, we often can look out into culture and see people who we think, well, if I had the power that they have, then I would be able to have the resources that I need to be able to solve these problems. So we look at people like Steve Jobs. Sorry, I'm in biblical mind. Steve Jobs, who he was such a great creative mind and thinker, and who was able to amass a fortune creating. Or we look at people like Michael Phelps, the most decorated Olympian ever, who's about to go back to Rio and do it again. Or the God of Cleveland, LeBron James. And we often can think, we can see that greatness, and we can think things like, if I had the physical ability like Phelps, or if I had the money like LeBron, if I just had like a small portion of what he has, I would be able to accomplish these things, and I would have unlimited resources. And we can kind of envy that greatness and power, but we can also, as I said, we can also think about ourselves as self-dependent, self-reliant, self-sufficient, thinking that we can control. And what's important for us to understand is that God views us totally differently than that. He does not view us that way. So we're going to look at Isaiah 40, and first we're going to focus on what it says about humans, and then we're going to focus on what it says about God. So in verse 6, it says, people are like grass. Their beauty fades as quickly as the flowers in a field. The grass withers and the flowers fade beneath the breath of the Lord. And so it is with people. As great as humanity is, it's passing by. It's like grass. It's not going to stay forever. And it withers and the flowers fade. In verse 15, it says, all the nations of the world are but a drop in the bucket. They are nothing more than dust on scales. The nations of the world are nothing or worth nothing to him. In his eyes, they count for less than nothing, mere emptiness and froth. All of our greatness is emptiness and froth from God's perspective. That's not saying that he doesn't care about us. It's not saying people are nothing to him. Like we would think, like, this means nothing to me. He does care deeply about us. He's proven that. But our greatness is froth. Our greatness is dust on the scales. What a picture of how great we think our world is and what it actually is to the Lord. Even LeBron is froth, dust on the scales. God sits above the circle of the earth. The people below seem like grasshoppers to him. He spreads out the heavens like a curtain and makes his tent from them. People are like grasshoppers, easily crushed by God. He judges the great people of the world and brings them all to nothing. They hardly get started, barely taking root when he blows on them and they wither. The wind carries them off like chaff. Again, they barely get started. Like, we think of this life as this, you know, and culture and our lives as this long process. To God, they've barely taken root. And with one breath, he can dismiss anything that we consider as so great. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fail in exhaustion. Even, hear that out there, everybody? Even the people who we think are so strong will eventually fail. I mean, Michael Phelps, there's going to come a time when he does not win the butterfly race. It's going to happen. He's already shrunk back from some of his events. It's going to happen that even everyone, every person at some point tires and fails. God's view is sobering, and it's important. It's important for us to let that sink in, that we really are weak. As great as we think we are, from God's perspective, we're very weak. Now, we also have some interesting views of God, and we're going to look at what Isaiah says. But, you know, I don't know, someone came up to me yesterday and said, you know, I'm actually have a scared view of God, and I don't have an image of this. But, you know, for some of us, there may be some in this room who are kind of, you know, like have an image of God, like the all-powerful person that he is, but just kind of waiting to, you know, impact some kind of wrath, like what you pointed out with your comment. So I don't have an image of that, but that could be something that some of us, you know, struggle with him. But I think a lot of us see these images that are sort of like, the meek and unpowerful holding the lamb, Jesus. Or most of you guys are too young to know this, but this is an actor named George Burns who portrayed God as like a cigar-smoking, cantankerous kind of God. Or maybe for sometimes we, I think like, oh, it's kind of like this world is just a struggle between like God, you know, Jesus who's powerful, but also the devil, and they're both kind of like equally powerful. I wonder who will win. Actually, the Bible's clear that God is the one. Or I think many of us view God as sort of like this, you know, old guy, even Santa, who kind of can help us and do some nice things for us, but mostly isn't that scary or formidable, and we could take him. He can't even put on his boots because, you know, like he needs help because his belly's too big. So, but maybe he'll do some nice things for us if we do the right things. And again, this is a partial, limited view of God's abilities and power. This is not the perspective that we get in the Bible. So let's look at Isaiah. It says that God stands forever. Yes, the sovereign Lord is coming in power. He will rule with a powerful arm. Not Santa, a powerful God who's going to set things right. Who else has held the oceans in his hand? Who has measured off the heavens with his fingers? Who else knows the weight of the earth or has weighed the mountain and hills on a scale? Have you guys been to the ocean? It's like goes on as far as the human eye can see. Not only that, but it's super dangerous and scary and powerful. God held that in his hand. God can measure the heavens with his fingers. Remember, God's the one who spoke it into existence. He knows all there is to know about the weight of the earth. Who is able to advise the Spirit of the Lord? Who knows enough to give him advice or teach him? Has the Lord ever needed anyone's advice? Does he need instruction about what is good? Did someone teach him what is right or show him the path of justice? This is speaking to God's power as the sovereign ruler, not only the one who can rule with a strong arm, but the one who knows all there is to know, who is self-sufficient in power, who does not need anyone to tell him because he contains all wisdom. No, for all the nations of the world are but a drop in the bucket. Again, they are nothing more than dust on the scales. He picks up the whole earth as though it were a grain of sand. The whole earth as though it were a grain of sand. It's such a great picture to remind us this thing that we think is so great is not to him. He can do whatever he wants. All the world in Lebanon's forests, all the wood in Lebanon's forests, and all Lebanon's animals would not be enough to make a burnt offering worthy of your God. Speaking again to the idea that he is the ruler, we could take everything in the world as an offering to him, and it would not match with his worthiness. He's beyond that. To whom can you compare God? What image can you find to resemble him? Haven't you heard? Don't you understand? Are you deaf to the words of God, the words he gave before the world began? Again, spoke into existence the word because he was there before the world began. And no one can compare to our God. To whom will you compare me? Who is my equal? Asked the Holy One. Look up into the heavens. Who created the stars? He brings them out like an army, one after another, calling each by name. Because of the great power and incomparable strength, not a single one is missing. My husband and I were having dinner with some friends last weekend, and we happened to be kind of out away from the city a little bit, and the stars happened to be super visible that night. And we were all like looking up in amazement at how many just layers upon layers of stars and so many. And that's, nothing compared to, as we know, what actually exists. And God knows them all by name. He created them. He is that powerful. He's that kind of God. His strength is uncomparable. Have you never heard? Have you never understood? The Lord, the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth, he never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. He gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. The everlasting God, again, creator of everything, and he never grows tired. He's self-sufficient. He doesn't need anyone to replenish his strength. This is an amazing God that we have. This is something to try to wrap our heads around. We can't fully understand it because he's infinite and that powerful. But this is worthy of our meditation, who this God is. The amount of strength, his worthiness, his right to rule, it's well worth us thinking about him. Tozer says, puts it, I really like how he says this. Since he has at his command all the power in the universe, the Lord can do anything as easily as anything else. All his acts are done without effort. He expends no energy that must be replenished. His self-sufficiency makes it unnecessary for him to look outside of himself for renewal of strength. All the power required to do all that he wills to do lies in undiminished fullness of his own infinite being. He has everything he needs to do anything he wants. And then also Arthur Pink says, well, may the saint trust such a God. He's like, yeah, people who believe in Christ can trust this God. He's worthy of implicit confidence. Nothing is too hard for him. If God were stinted in might and had a limit to his strength, we might well despair. Again, going back and saying, like, if we had limited resources, we should despair. But seeing that he is clothed with omnipotence, no prayer is too hard for him to answer, no need too great for him to supply, no passion too strong for him to subdue, no temptation too powerful for him to deliver from, no misery too deep for him to relieve. What a picture of our God, our omnipotent God, who is able to do any of these things, to take care of any of our problems, to relieve us from misery, to supply us with the power that we need. He is a God who's great beyond what we can imagine. So the result then of right thinking is that we begin to learn to trust God. So like Pink says, of the, you know, the saint can trust this God. The believer can trust this God because of his attributes. And this is really comforting, and we've talked about the discomforting part, but God wants us to be comforted by this. And also, one of the reasons that it's comforting is that we actually have access to his power. This power that we're talking about, we have access to it. So in Isaiah 40, before anything I read to you in verse 1, actually, before he goes into man's weakness, before he goes into God's strength, the very first verse he says, God says, comfort, oh, comfort my people, says your God. He's saying we can take comfort in the fact that we're weak, and we can take comfort in the fact that he is strong. In Deuteronomy 31:6, it says, strong and courageous, do not be afraid or terrified because of them, for the Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you nor forsake you. Again, comforting. We've got this powerful God, and he says, I'm never going to leave you, and I'm never going to forsake you. And in Jeremiah 29:11, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord, plans to prosper you and not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future. And so it's comforting to know that we have this powerful God who wants to give us a prosperous life where he's able to work through us and show us through his wisdom plans that actually are good for our lives. And it's important for us to understand that we do have access to his power. In Isaiah 40:29, a verse that I already read, he gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. And then a verse that I didn't read, popular verse, Isaiah 40:31. Those who wait for the Lord will gain new strength. They will mount up with wings like eagles. They will run and not get tired. They will walk and not become weary. Showing us that we can have strength as we trust in God. Two other great verses from Ephesians. Ephesians 3:20 and 21, it says, to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us, to him be glory in the church and in Christ Jesus throughout all generations, forever and ever. Amen. More than we can imagine, according to his power that he says works within us. And then Ephesians 1:19-20, I also pray that you will understand the incredible greatness of God's power for us who believe him. This is the same power that raised Christ from the dead. It's important for us to understand that we already have access to the power of God if we have the Holy Spirit. When we come into a relationship with Him and the Spirit comes to dwell in us, we have the ability to tap into that power and have Him work in our lives in a way that He's able to unleash this great power that He has. But the question is, how do we access that power? Well, this is just a repeat of what I've already said. The beginning of understanding how to access God's power is to meditate on who He is, that He is sovereign and omnipotent, and to know Him. So first thing to access that is to understand who He is. And the second thing is to remember who we are, weak and needy, that we need to go to Him. We need to know who He is. We need to meditate and memorize and think about who He is. And then we need to go to Him in our weakness. And this is comforting to us too, because God works through our weakness. Like I've already said, when we hit that despair spot and we realize that we need Him, actually, you know, it can be discomforting us to realize our limitations, but actually the fact that God is able to work through weakness is very comforting to us. Here's a great quote by James Stewart, not Jimmy. "It is always upon human weakness, not on human strength and confidence, that God chooses to build His kingdom. And He can do this not merely in spite of our ordinariness and helplessness and infirmities, but precisely because of them. It's a thrilling discovery to make, and it can revolutionize our outlook." Again, moving back to this pounding this thing home, that what we think about God is the most important thing about us. That is what can revolutionize our lives and our outlook when we understand who He is and who we are. Dependence is the thing that lays hold of power, not self-sufficiency. Again, we revert to wanting to control, but actually it's dependence on Him that enables Him to do the spiritual work that we want. And it's important to understand that the mind is actually our battlefield about this topic. Again, reiterating how we think about God makes all the difference. And so we need to meditate on who He is, and then we need to act. In other words, we need to think rightly about Him, and then we need to decide that we're going to take steps of faith based on what we know about Him. And I just want to put a little plug in for memorizing scripture. When it comes to understanding who God is, or I mean anything, but you know, in our lives, when we've taken the time to actually memorize some of those things so that they're able to come to our minds more readily, it makes a huge difference when we're in those situations where we have to make a decision about whether we're going to act. So I just want to, you know, it's hard for some people. I just want to say, like, even a few choice verses can make a big difference in our lives. Because as Paul says in Romans 12:2, don't be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. That's how our mind is changed. That's how we're transformed, is when we allow the word and the knowledge of who God is to sink deeply into our minds, to actually allow it to permeate our thinking. That makes a huge difference. And it's that transformation then, as we allow Him to begin changing our thinking, as we start to realize who He is, that transformation is what then radiates out of our lives and affects the way we love people in our relationships. We will not have an impact, you know, knowing a few intellectual things about God will not impact our love relationships. Allowing Him to change our thinking about who He is and who we are will impact our relationships. So I want to spend the rest of the time kind of going back through these thinking, these ways that we think, and kind of talk about like what it would look like practically to put some of this stuff in action. And this is going to be, you know, sometimes I'm just going to be dipping our toe, you know, the toe into these topics, because fears obviously is a huge topic. Despair is a huge topic. Bitterness and justice, huge topic. And, you know, we just don't have time. But hopefully my prayer is that you guys, as we're talking about this, that God will bring to mind the most important thing, the thing that he wants you to get or to think about in your life that's related to these topics. And so, you know, where fear is and insecurity are concerned, I mean, the majority of people struggle with fear and insecurity. Even Larry Crabb was saying, you know, Wednesday night, like, I still get fear, you know, fearful to come up and speak. And, you know, he's well respected and people have read his books and really like him and everything. But we all struggle, most of us struggle with fear and insecurity. And so what I've done in this section is I've got like a biblical example that kind of speaks to this, and then a personal example, and then some things that we might meditate on, and then how it might impact the way we love. So the biblical example I'm using for fear and insecurity, I could pick many from the Bible. Thank God we have a lot of those examples. But I'm going to talk about Timothy. Timothy was mentored by Paul. He was a great Christian leader in the church. And yet we know from the things that Paul's written that he struggled with, you know, sometimes being fearful or being insecure. And he's told by Paul to, you know, not let anyone look down on his youthfulness and different things. And in 2 Timothy 1:7, it says, he has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and discipline. And so this idea that, you know, we do struggle with fearfulness, but God's like, I've given you this spirit that is powerful, that you're able to use that power to love people. And that is like something that we can cling on to, that example. So my examples, one of them is similar to Timothy. I also struggle with difficult discussions. You know, whenever I have to bring up something hard to say to someone, if there's something that I see that maybe would help them or that, but might be kind of touchy situation. I mean, I almost always would just rather not do that. And yet God tells me, you know, this is the way to love, right? Like, it's important for us to learn to, it's not a problem that we have fears. The thing is, do we let those fears control us in how we act? And so this is part of the meditating on who he is, that he's given this the spirit of power, and then acting, choosing then to go ahead and have difficult discussions or other things. Again, this is where you might be thinking of specific things in your life. I also have a story about when I was pregnant with my first child. I was like super paranoid pregnant woman. I was fearful of everything. I was like secretly, you know, like if someone turned on a microwave, I secretly would slink out of the room. Like I was crazy person. And so I was so worried about having a healthy baby. And like I was doing everything in my control to do it. Thank God it wasn't today, because like they have so many more limitations now. But when I had my son, I was like, oh, so relieved. He's healthy. And then it, like, God brought this crazy thought into my head, like, oh my God, he's now in the world. Anything can happen to him. And it just like showed this, you know, here I am thinking like, I'm gonna control this situation. I'm gonna take care of it. And then it was like one of those great realizations, like, oh, whoa. There are so many things that I can't control that I need to just cast those anxieties on to God about. And this is how it is a lot of times with us. We have these things that we think maybe we can manage. Then God often shows us, okay, there's something a little bigger here that I want you to take a look at. So like my underlying beliefs in those situations are things like I can control the result, Or they can be the flip side, I'm too afraid to do it. Or some of us struggle with, I'm not capable of doing it, it's too hard for me. It's more than I can handle. You fill in the blank, it's important for us to identify what our underlying thinking is, because that thing is related directly to God's power. So whatever we're thinking often is in opposition to what he's actually saying. And so things to meditate on are things like, God is powerful enough to take care of me. Thinking of those verses where he says, I'll be with you always. That my identity, which I didn't really talk about too, but a lot of times with insecurity, something that can come in is we're so worried about what people think of us that we think our identity is wrapped up in how we're viewed. But our identity actually is not in how we're viewed. And again, something to meditate on is learning how to cast those anxieties on him. I mean, he wants us to tell him what we're afraid of. He already knows, but that's part of our relationship with him, telling him that stuff. Another great verse is Romans 8:31. If God is for us, who's against us? Looking at that power that we have access to. And so how this impacts us loving others are things like we're able to choose to act on his agenda instead of our own. So when we're shrinking back, like I could have chosen to, wrap my son up in a bubble and keep him from going out in the world. That would not have been loving, right? Like, it's important for us to figure out, like, what's God's will here, not so much my fear controlling. Know that he's at work and that our worth is based on him. And these, you're going to kind of hear a repetitive thing going on here, because a lot of the answers to some of these thinking that we do are like similar kinds of things to think about, to meditate on. All right, in the area of control, like I said, often when we leap in and control something, it's born out of a fear, and we want to take situations under our control and impose our will so that we can be assured of the outcome. And the great example I have for this is Christ when he's arrested. In Matthew 26, it says, "Behold, one of those who were with Jesus reached and drew out his sword and struck the slave of the high priest and cut off his ear. Then Jesus said to him, 'Put your sword back in its place, for all those who take up the sword shall perish by the sword. Or do you think that I cannot appeal to my Father and he will at once put at my disposal more than 12 legions of angels? How then will the scriptures be fulfilled, which say that it must happen this way?'" This is a great example, because God could have chosen to take control at any time when he was arrested, when he was going to the cross. He could have chosen to say, you know what, I'm done with this idea, I'm going to take over here. But he purposefully chose to limit his power. Why? Because he saw that God was at work. He knew that this, in order for God's plan of redemption to occur, he knew that he had to allow this to happen. And so he had the big picture, not just his small story of how he wanted God, how he might feel at that moment, like, I really don't want to go through this. I mean, I can't imagine, as the creator of the universe, that your creation is arresting you, spitting on you, treating you with total disrespect. I'm sure that there was within him a desire to have, to take over that, but he knew the bigger picture, and he chose not to do that. I have a lot of examples of how I've tried to take control in my life, and this is like one of the most shallow ones, but I just like to use it because sometimes these things are shallow. Like, I could talk about how, something was happening with someone I loved, and so instead of, praying it through or thinking about what God was doing, I just leaped in there. But this is a case of there was something wrong with our car, and my husband had gone to bed, and I was downstairs on the internet trying to figure out what was wrong. And I thought that I came to the conclusion that he had overfilled our car with oil, and it was going to be it was going to ruin our car, and we didn't have enough money to take care of it. Now, mind you, none of that was even true. So I'm like, I've solved this problem. And my husband's upstairs in bed, and I'm like I've made this decision. I'm coming up the stairs. And like, seriously, the spirit was convicting me, like, don't say anything. What are you doing? And I'm just like, I need to take control of this, and I need to tell him how this terrible thing has happened. And I just like go into the bedroom and blah. And like part of my mind is like, don't say it. And I'm just like, blah, you've ruined our car. Da, 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 da. Only to find out the next day that wasn't even true. My point is, like, sometimes we don't even know the real story. We think we know everything there is, and we're like ready to take charge of that. And actually, how unloving was that to my husband, accusing him first wrongly, but like even just going in that way and talking about it, and not even realizing that that wasn't the truth. So the underlying belief a lot of times with control is fearful that, you know, God's not, I mean, that was my thing, fearful that God wasn't going to take care of my needs, fearful that if I don't control it, then something bad's going to happen. So again, meditating on God's sovereignty, that he's at work, that he might be doing something that we're not seeing. And like Christ says, his will is more important than mine. Getting focus off of me and on to him. Christ in Luke 22 says, you know what, Father, if you're willing, remove this cup, but not my will, your will. And what a great example. So in loving others, I think you can see, you can already like make this connection, adopting God's agenda for other people's lives and prayerfully asking, what's God trying to do here? Do I need to wait on him to see more before I just race in there with my ideas? Will this thing that I'm thinking actually be loving to the person? Or am I just imposing my will? I remember a few years ago, I made this solemn decision to, every time I had to have a difficult discussion, to pray a lot for the person to see it in their own heart. And it was amazing how, you know, not always, but it was amazing how often when I got together, the person had already been thinking about the very hard thing that I was going to bring up. That is the power of the Holy Spirit. We have access to that. It doesn't always work that way. It's not like a recipe. But like the reality is, we want to take control, but God actually sometimes has a different plan. He wants to work things out a different way. We can still act on his truth, knowing that he's at work. All right, in the area of justice and bitterness, and again, this is just scratching the surface because some people have really, really hard, terrible injustices that occur to them. So I do not want in any way to look at this like this is a, well, all you have to do is know God's big and then you can forgive, you know, like, but nonetheless, it's worth saying hurt and injustice. We all face it. We all face difficult people. We all face enemies and perceived enemies. We all face disappointment with people and how life turned out. We all face it. And we often want to get someone to pay for how my life has gone. We often focus on that. The greatest biblical example, well, I don't know if it's the greatest, but Joseph is a great biblical example. Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers, totally mistreated, spent time in jail, wrongly accused. Seriously, if I had been Joseph when I read that story, I'm like, I would have been the most bitter person on the earth because I would have been focusing on how all these people have done these terrible things to me. But not Joseph. He actually continues to look toward God. And in the end, when it's by his position there in Egypt that enables the nation of Israel to be saved because there's a famine. And he happens to be in a position where he has helped them collect food to save. When his brothers come back, I mean, it's a super long story. But after his father dies and his brothers are kind of like, what is Joseph going to think now? What will happen? He says, as for you, you meant it evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result to preserve many people alive. He sees God was at work in that situation. That's That's the kind of thing we can cling to. And I'm not going to go into examples. I mean, we all have examples of being treated wrongly. I could tell you some horrifying examples of how I've been hurt in my life. And the underlying beliefs are things like the wrong is too big to forgive. Like I already said before, if I forgive, I'll be letting them off. This wrong deserves judgment. And actually, wrongs do deserve judgment. Sin deserves judgment. The way we treat each other badly deserves judgment. But the question is, am I going to exact that justice, or am I going to let God? And again, not to say that there are not situations where people need to make restitution and stuff like that. We can meditate on these things, like Joseph, that God will ultimately set all things right. That's a promise we have with this powerful God. Also related to this, something to meditate on is that we have been forgiven much. As we understand the amount that we're forgiven, it helps us as we focus in on what other people have done to us. Many of the things that we spend time meditating on and are bitter about, at least I can speak for my own life, are not huge things. They're actually often things that I've done similar things to someone else. So it's this understanding God is going to set things right, and understanding that we also have been forgiven. Deuteronomy 32:35 speaks to the fact that God says, "Vengeance is mine and retribution in due time, their foot will slip." He actually will set the new heaven and new earth all right. Of course, we all escape judgment who have received Christ, which is awesome. But anything that does need to be punished or anything like that, we can trust that he's going to take care of that. And in Luke 7, this is to emphasize the impact of our understanding our own sin. A moneylender had two debtors. One owed 500 denarii and the other 50. When they were unable to repay, he graciously forgave them both. So which of them will love more? And Simon answered and said, "I suppose the one who he forgave more." And Jesus says, "Yeah, you're right." In other words, the more we understand about our own sin, the more we're able to, with this tough, tough area of forgiveness, bitterness, justice, the more we're able to learn to extend forgiveness to other people. So loving others, then, the way this impacts us is it helps us to consider the larger picture of what God is doing. When we step back and realize, you know, God is a sovereign God who has allowed this to happen. Is there something he's doing through this situation? Can I trust that he's going to take care of this? And it allows us to extend forgiveness. And then the final thinking is despair, where we find ourselves in seemingly hopeless situations, often long-term suffering. Sometimes it's because of loved ones who are stuck in unbelief. That's super painful to us. Sometimes it's just extreme disappointment with our lives. Lots of things can send us into the hole of despair. The biblical example I want to use is Psalm 73. It's a great psalm where Asaph looks out and he's like envious of all the people who don't believe in God, who have everything that he thinks he should have. And he feels like, why have I even kept my relationship with God? I see these people and they're prospering in a way that I'm not prospering. He says at one point, "When my heart was grieved and my spirit embittered, I was a senseless and ignorant, a brute beast before you." It's such a great image of us as we have that perspective. But he turns and looks at God and who he is, and he says, "Yet I am always with you. You hold my right hand. You guide me with your counsel, and afterwards you will take me into glory. But as for me, it is good to be near God. I have made the sovereign Lord my refuge. I will tell of all your deeds." So this changed perspective, and it really reiterates this whole thing that Tozer's saying, like when we think rightly, when we think, when we look at the horizontal perspective and we see our lives from a human perspective, we're like brute beasts who start to just look at what we envy and think about things in a very human way. When we turn our thinking onto this powerful God that we have, who longs to have this deep relationship with us, we are able to see, wow, God, you're with me. You hold me. You promise that this isn't all there is. There is another life to look forward to that's going to be perfect. And these are things that can change the way we think in these situations. My example of this is the week my son was born, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. I was already a hormonal wreck, and I was just like, this is the end. My mom's never going to have a relationship with my son, and I was very despairing about that. She did actually get to live 8 years that we got to have together, so my son and daughter do both remember my mom. But the thing that's interesting about that situation, and we can't be promised these kinds of things, but my mom was a believer, but she was never walking, and that time she did actually walk with the Lord, and it caused us to be grateful for every day that we had together, which you don't always think that way. And so, we're much more aware of how much we cared for each other. And again, you can't, not all, despairing situations are tough. They don't always end in a story. Like, I have those great things to say. It's not always like that. But we can trust that our God is doing something, even in situations of utter despair. So we can meditate on trials in light of truth, on the true riches, because a lot of times despair has to do with our circumstances. God wants us to look at the fact that he wants to transform our lives and our thinking and give us renewed hope and having an eternal perspective, rather than only focusing in on the trials. That's just a repeat. So loving others means that we can tell others about the greatness of God. Like he says in Psalm 73, I'll tell all about you. And encouraging people that there's more than this life. Think about it. Every person in this world experiences despair and hopelessness. But we have a God who tells us there's something beyond this life. There's something that he can even work through those difficult things. We have this opportunity to be a hope and a light for people who don't have that in their lives. What an awesome blessing as we experience despair to be able to look at that, draw close to him, and be able to say, God, how do you want to use this in other people's lives around me? Imagine sharing that kind of hope with people who have no hope. And I just want to point out that on the practical level, that it's important to lean on your friends. You can't live this way by yourself. It's important to help each other identify underlying beliefs. It's important to commit to reminding each other the hope that we have and meditate. Again, memorize. Meditate, think rightly about God. So the question for all of us today is, think about the last time you were hurting, worried, fearful, despairing, and you took control. Just think through, this is again my prayer, what would it look like for you to trust God next time? What would it look like? What is he honing in on with you that he wants you to trust him more with? How can focusing on who he is have an impact on how you're going to live in the future? And then my last verse, it's in your notes, but I just always have to read it because it's my favorite. Then I looked and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne and the living creatures and the elders, and the number of them was myriad of myriad and thousands of thousands, saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and might and honor and glory and blessing. And every created thing which is in the heaven and on the earth and under the earth and on the sea and all the things in them, I heard saying to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb be blessing and honor and glory and dominion forever and ever. I mean, just think about it. It is going to happen. He is going to rule with a strong arm. He is going to return. He is going to set things right. And every creature is going to acknowledge it, not just people. Like every creature, I always get this crazy image of like all the little tiny creatures in the sea. Like everyone is going to just be saying like, this God is the God of the universe. Praise him. He's awesome. And we're going to get to see that. And what a great thing to try to focus on as we kind of live through the muck of what this world is. And that's all.
This study was recorded at Xenos Christian Fellowship and is copyrighted. You may freely copy and distribute it as long as you keep it intact and do not sell it.